in the place. Under some pressure. Hit and set by Gilbert Brown. Who rock grooves and make moves with all the mommies. The back.
Hill Gravedigger.
The back of the club, Mackin. Yeah. My crew's behind me.
I mean, this guy was 345 pounds, and when you have a nickname like the Gravedigger, you're God.
And now, presented by Stadium View Bar, Grill, and Banquet Hall in beautiful Green Bay, Wisconsin, the Packer Report Podcast with Gilbert Brown. Here's your host, publisher of the Packer Report, Ross Uglum.
Me, sweetie, I got enough to feed the need. No need to be greedy. I got mad friends with Benz that see notes by the layers. True to life.
What's up, Green Bay Packers fans? This is your host, Ross Uglum, publisher of the Packer Report, and welcome to the Packer Report Podcast with Gilbert Brown, brought to you by Stadium View Bar, Grill, and Banquet Hall. So pleased to have you all with us, and hoping that you've taken this week to kind of decompress and move forward. As you all know by now, certainly, the Green Bay Packers are headed into the offseason after a NFC Championship game loss to the San Francisco 49ers in a season that I'm not sure, a ton of folks saw coming, and certainly a season that I would say Packers fans can be proud of. To that end, dive into the news real quick before we bring on Gilbert Brown. If you haven't heard yet, there was a little bit of noise surrounding the potential retention or not retention of Packers head coach, Packers defensive coordinator Mike Pettine by the head coach Matt LaFleur. Said at his press conference that they were still evaluating, though that didn't take very long. About, 3 hours after his press conference, word started to kind of creep out of 1265 Lombardi that Mike Pettine was going to return as the Packers defensive coordinator. Some more minor coaching news, I would say, is that Matt Rhule, former Baylor coach and now Carolina Panthers head coach, has hired defensive backs coach Jason Simmons off the Packers staff and onto his own staff. So Coach Simmons and Green Bay will need a new defensive backs coach. That's about the long and short of it. It's, we're just kind of getting into the offseason. Obviously no free agency, and we're not quite ready to unleash that draft content for all of you. Right now, though, I'm going to bring on the ever-present star of the show, Gilbert Brown. How are we doing here, Gilbert, on this Saturday morning?
What's up, bud? Just chilling, man. Got a lot of snow shoveling outside, so the background noise, people, sorry, can't stop that. So,
yeah, you got something going on. What are you doing in the what are you doing in the Promised Land? What are you doing in Green Bay?
I am in Green Bay doing the Green Bay RV show, WBAY RV show. I do a lot of stuff for my foundation with the Waco Campground Association. So they are involved in these RV shows. So I have to attend, appear, and be nice and have fun. But it's always great to get back to Green Bay, no matter what the circumstances is.
That's right, folks. Get to the RV show, get you an RV and meet Gilbert, but get you an RV ride in style. And by the way, let me borrow it whenever I need to move my family anywhere.
Absolutely.
So we've prided ourselves on this show about not necessarily always talking ball, and people I think appreciate when we do talk about football, but I think we've got a couple of fans that enjoy, some of the different topics that we discussed, and we're going to even be, I think, more different. We're going to go a different side of a different topic. Most people, talk about this era of movies. You got Martin Scorsese talking about, these superhero movies aren't movies. They aren't films. They aren't cinema. They're theme park rides, and they're not real movies and this and that. And I think a lot of that is directed towards the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the 22 movies, 26 movies, however many movies that ended up being. And that's certainly not you and I. We enjoy those. You and I both get a kick out of them. I've got a 9-10-year-old stepson that loves that stuff, and it's all stuff from when, you and I grew up, so we really enjoy that. But I want to talk about the other side of it. And, when I was a kid, my number one guy was Superman, and I think my number two was Batman, probably because of Batman the Animated Series. And I feel like you know, we've talked a little bit about the DC movies, and they've gone down a different path, I think. And certainly not as popular of a path. They've been more hit and miss. Hits like Shazam, Wonder Woman, and misses like the, you know, the original Suicide Squad, Batman versus Superman, and people are pretty split on Justice League too. Where do you stand with the DC movies, Gilbert?
I always like, I mean, I'm a comic book fan of all, you know, so I really like both of them, to tell you the truth. To me, I mean, I don't think there is a bad movie out there when it comes to this, because I just want to see it and enjoy it. Sometimes to me, when you look at the costumes, most of those movies don't do well because they're not in the right costume. I mean, look at X-Men. Did X-Men ever put out a really great movie? It's because the characters are not true to what the people realize. You know, and then you go back to the Suicide Squad and all these other stuff, you know, all these other places, they don't, to me, don't have a good costume. So to me, it's not really recognizable, and you're waiting on this to happen, waiting on that to happen. And to me, Marvel is far above DC, for real. But I think DC is catching up.
Yeah, that was always a struggle. You know, Hugh Jackman played Wolverine for like 15 years, never put on the suit one time.
Right.
And that's, I completely understand where you're coming from. It's going to be, I think, kind of cool when, you know, Disney basically bought Fox out. And so they have now the rights to the Fantastic Four and the rights to, you know, the rights to the X-Men, which they never had before. And so that's kind of down the line and some exciting stuff. Cause I think, you know, you talk about Marvel and you do have the potential for more authentic stories, more authentic costumes, more authentic uniforms, you know, things that these guys are actually gonna do. Is that kind of how you felt, Gilbert, what I said there, as far as, you know, which ones were good? I know you kind of like them all, but did you enjoy any DC movies more than the other? Like I said, I'm on the same side as most people, where I really enjoyed Shazam. It spoke a lot to our family, where, you know, we don't have, like, myself personally, we don't have the most traditional family. Shazam was all about, you know, kind of untraditional families and just kind of finding your place in the world. And I really enjoyed that messaging. I thought it was fun. I thought it was funny. I thought it wasn't as dark as some of the other DC stuff. And then everybody liked Wonder Woman. I was rare in that. I really liked Man of Steel. I think that people kind of crapped on that movie a little bit, but I really enjoyed it. And specifically, I enjoyed it because I think Henry Cavill is an unbelievably good Superman. I understand he's had some stuff to work with that isn't great. You know, Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice is widely panned as not a great movie. I'm not sure his handling in Justice League was all that good either, but he's really good.
Yeah, I kind of, I loved Aquaman. Aquaman was kick-ass, man. And then you turn around, I enjoyed Justice League just because it let everybody know who the boss was. Superman was the boss in that movie. He whooped everybody's ass, came in, did what he's supposed to do, didn't struggle and do all that other stuff to try to make him look like he was, you know, not the Man of Steel. That movie there, I mean, when he came in and threw everybody around in Justice League and let them know, I am the boss, I run this show, and then he went in and took care of business. That's how it's supposed to be. You know what I'm saying? Don't try to make it out of something that is not when you're putting a good movie together, because you want to see him be the man. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, I mean, everybody like Wonder Woman, and they want her to do the woman thing, and Batman is the guy that can beat everybody if you sit down and think about it. But Superman goes in, shuts it down, do what he's supposed to do, fly off into the sunset.
Yeah, and I think that was, like I said, the death of Superman story is an important story, and it's, you know, like I told you in like episode 3 or 4 of this show, that was the first real run of comics. Like my dad ever first brought me to a comic book store. That was what was going on in like 93 or 94 or whatever it was. And that story basically gets told in Batman v Superman and Justice League, both the death and resurrection of Superman. And that was a lot of fun. Aquaman, I enjoyed Aquaman too. I felt like that movie was just like, okay, you're going to have fun for an hour and a half, and we're not going to take this movie too seriously. And I really felt like they didn't take themselves too seriously. It was just, you know, fun for an hour and a half. And I think you absolutely nailed that. A couple of DC movies coming up. Both are female led. You've got Margot Robbie kind of leading this Birds of Prey movie in coming out actually just in a couple weeks, February 7th. She is reprising her role as Harley Quinn, but you've got some other famous, I would say, female characters from the DC universe. You've got Huntress, you've got Black Canary. It's going to be kind of a cool take on that crew, the Birds of Prey crew. That was a really awful Birds of Prey TV series in the mid 2000s. If you ever get a chance to look for it on YouTube, go ahead. It was really bad, but it's an interesting casting, and it's got one of my favorite Batman villains of all time in Black Mask, Roman Sionis. Have you ever read anything with Black Mask in it?
Yeah, I read some. He was in a couple of the video games and
The Arkham games, yeah, very fun.
Yeah, he was a interesting character, kind of cool with his outfit, you know, no nonsense type of a guy. But it was pretty cool to see him being brought so people can, you know, brought up so people can visualize him for real. You know what I mean?
Yeah, this will be more of a grounded movie, if you will, not so, you know, crazy superpower stuff like that. Could be closer to almost the Nolan Batman trilogy because, you know, Black Mask doesn't have a ton of powers. He's basically a gangster, you know, and these women are not a big superpowered group either. So it'll be more grounded, and then they'll go completely the opposite direction with Wonder Woman 1984. I think the 80s are a big thing right now. You see the success of Stranger Things. Even the X-Men tried it with Days of Future Past, but setting things in the 80s right now is kind of hip. Are you excited for Wonder Woman 1984?
Yeah. I'm kind of excited because her, you say legacy or whatever with the Justice League or Super Friends or whatever you want to call it is you try to figure out, you know, who's number one, you know, and then, is Batman number two, Wonder Woman number three, or was Wonder Woman number two, Batman number three, you know, and then some of the shows, Superman and Batman are fighting over her, different things like that. So I always enjoyed her because she's a strong woman. She's a no nonsense, get the job done, but sexy as hell when she do her job. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. No, I do. And I'm interested to see who Pedro Pascal plays. And so people that don't necessarily remember that name. So he was the Viper in Game of Thrones and was just the Mandalorian in The Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. People will recognize kind of his accent, his way of speaking. And he's one of my favorite actors right now. And I'm excited to see, because that's not something that has been declared. That's not something that's been in the trailer, who he is, who he's playing. So I'm really excited to see who Pedro Pascal plays. And then finally, we've got yet another actor making a run at being the Caped Crusader. It's a long line, you know, of guys. Michael Keaton obviously kind of started it as far as the movies are concerned. Then you had Val Kilmer gave it a shot, and George Clooney gave it a shot. Then I think maybe the most successful version was Christian Bale in the Dark Knight trilogy. Now you have Ben Affleck, who has basically said he's done, you know, playing Batman. So they have turned to Twilight's Robert Pattinson in kind of a I would say controversial move. What are you thinking of that?
The chicks dig it. I'm pretty sure they do. But how can I say this without getting yelled at? He's the type of a guy you want to see a more big, strong, you know, guy, you know, and all his moves that he's been in, he's not been an imposing, scary, women look for that scary, sexy type, I guess, you know? And to me, I mean, that combination for him does not work unless he bulks up, looks like he got a bigger frame and can handle the bat suit to where, you know, everybody's like, oh, okay, we like that. But, you know, it's kind of hard to, I don't know, man. I'm sitting here thinking like, please, the guy, just let him be better than Ben Affleck. You know what I'm saying? And I'm hoping that he is.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because, you know, Keaton was really thin when he played Bruce Wayne. Yeah. And that 1980, you go back and watch the 1989 Batman, which is one of our favorites. Said it on our live show. It's his favorite movie because, you know, Batman and the Prince soundtrack and just an awesome film. But Keaton was really thin. And Bale wasn't all that. He wasn't skinny either.
Yeah.
But he didn't get huge. Ben Affleck got yoked to play Batman. Yes. Like, crazy, crazy yoked. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm definitely, you know, excited. I think Zoe Kravitz will do a good job as Catwoman. I'm really excited to see Colin Farrell as the Penguin. I think that's a really, really interesting casting decision, and I'm interested to see where he takes it. And then, you know, the final thing that we're looking for, I'm pumped about that Black Adam movie that's coming on. Black Adam being kind of the antithesis of Shazam, if you will, kind of an anti-hero.
Oh, yeah.
And that's going to be, you know, who's playing that.
Oh yeah. I mean, they got the right guy for that. I think, the costumes is what sets it off, man, for me and Shazam, you know what I'm saying? Because they're true to the game with the costumes, you know what I'm saying? And to see, you know, if you know Black Adam, if you know his story, you know, there's always a triple threat match between Shazam, Superman, and Black Adam, you know, which is always good. And to see him be the guy, the guy that's going to be on deck to handle the Shazam family, it's going to be all right, man. I can't wait for it to come out.
Yeah, super excited for Rock to dig his teeth into that, into that role. I think it should be a ton of fun, and I'm excited about it. It should be great. All right, let's take a moment here to pay some bills. And you know what that means? It's time to thank Stadium View Bar, Grill, and Banquet Hall for being the title sponsor to this show. And it is, you know, we would certainly be saying nice things about them even if they weren't. And I think that's something you know, that we have discussed on this show over at Stadium View. Bob does such a good job over there. It is truly a place that we believe in, and I think that makes it, you know, a lot easier for us to say nice things about it because we're not making it up. this is real talk. This is, you know, the place that we would probably be at if we were in Green Bay, whether or not they were involved with us at all. It's just, man, it's been such an awesome place to be a Packer fan and be somebody that enjoys having a good time in Green Bay.
Yeah, that Stadium View, man, it's a awesome place to go. And I know people like, why do y'all keep telling us how great it is? Because we need you guys to get over there and understand it. If you need a place during training camp, when training camp starts, and you need a place to go chill or come in and cool off or get a bite to eat because you're not that far from the practice fields, that's an awesome place to go. So Stadium View is a plus in season, out of season, to go have a great time and get great eats.
It is, yeah. And so we're going to – I talked to Bob, and he kind of enjoyed this, so we're going to do this one more time. Folks, we're dropping this show probably about 10 o'clock a.m. on a Saturday. If you're listening to this, this is what I need you to know. Today, Saturday, you've got Chef's Choice Specials, and the soup is beer cheese. You cannot beat that. Get you some popcorn and beer cheese soup. Thank me later. Secondly, you've got $11 bottomless mimosas from 10 to 3. It's 9:15 a.m. We're going to get this show done. We're going to get it out to you. And as soon as you listen to this, get over to Stadium View, because for the next 5 hours, you can drink mimosas till you're blue in the face for $11. You can't beat it. You can't beat it. Mimosas. Have you had one?
No, I'm too big for mimosas.
All right, yeah, it's a champagne and OJ. That's
it is. Okay.
Yeah, champagne and orange juice. It's a popular it's for breakfast, but you have too many of these, you get the sugar going and you get the bubbles going, you're gonna have a wicked headache. So pace yourselves, people. You know, the name of the game is not necessarily to get your $11 worth.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, not necessarily. All right, man. Let's get this. Let's kick this off season stuff off. Kick off some football. I have to feel like you and I, and we agree on most stuff, I would say, from a football perspective. You and I are lockstep number one in agreement that the number one offseason priority is to extend Kenny Clark.
Oh, most definitely. Heck yeah. I mean, come on, man. I mean, to me, in the middle of that defense, you got to have a heart and soul. You know, everybody else is glamour positions. Inside, in between the tackles, no one really wants to be that guy that's going to get beat up, double teamed. You know, you got to fight for your plays. You got to fight to get a sack. You got to fight to do this. So Kenny Clark is the epitome of an inside guy in between the tackles. He should be one of the premier guys in the league, and he should be paid as well.
For sure, and that was something that I, you know, I kind of thought of throughout the course of the season. I wrote about how the Packers need to be aggressive. I wrote about the, you know, all the things that kind of went their way this season to get this team to a 13-3 record, and one of those things was that they were remarkably healthy. It's just a fact. I mean, I'm not saying that what the Packers achieved that, you know, they didn't deserve, or I'm not saying any of that. But what I am telling you is that it's an uncontrovertible fact that the Packers stayed extremely healthy. And one of those guys who stayed pretty darn healthy was Kenny Clark. He was battling some stuff early. And there were times during the season where I thought to myself, my God, if Kenny Clark had to miss three games, how would they stop anybody? And really think about that from a roster perspective. I mean, think about what that defense would look like without number 97.
I mean, that's spooky, man, when you put it down like that. But then you got to say, okay, if we get Kenny and get him squared away in the fold, then how can we help him? You know, how can we help him or get more help in there so that we can contend and stop the run? That's what we got to do.
Right. And I think the answer to that is to get another big ugly. I mean, I've been talking about that all season. Yeah. I don't think many people would agree, but, it depends on who shakes out of the draft. But if I'm Green Bay, I know about, you know, we need wide receiver this, we need tight end that, we need weapons. Mm-hmm. You need Kenny Clark to not have the whole thing on his plate. And I think that a good free agent defensive lineman or a good, you know, or a high pick on the defensive line to take some off of Kenny Clark to make that defensive front more versatile and maybe instead of, you know, 900 snaps, 950 snaps, he's playing 800 snaps. By the way, if you play 800 snaps as basically what he's playing, which is a nose, you play 800 steps, you're still playing 50 snaps a game over 16 games. Exactly. That's 16 times 5 is 800. He played 954 snaps, Gilbert. At, you know, that's too many. It's just too many.
You know what, man? What's the GM's name?
Brian Gutekunst.
Okay. Mr. Brian, as you said. When you sit there and you listen to him talk, did he address to you everything that you think is wrong with this team?
No, and I didn't expect him to. You know, I mean, he did say priority number one is Kenny Clark. He nailed that, said we expect to have something done, and then said we have to take a long look at inside linebacker and we have to add weapons. And I think he was very careful in the way that he said the inside linebacker thing. I think he gave himself a lot of kind of wiggle room there.
Yeah, to me, if you go back and you look over the season, addressing certain areas, you know, because, I mean, he gets paid to do this, and we sit back and critique him. But to me, I mean, we always talking about the scheme. I wish he would sit down and look at the scheme of the defense and look at the scheme of the offense and how we're attacking. Not saying that the head coach is not calling the right plays. Yes, we need more weapons on offense. But in enhancing the scheme, you have to look at the O-line, D-line, and who do we keep, who do we bring back, how do we make them better so they can be 50-50 balance, run and pass. You know what I'm saying? Then on defense – In our scheme, how do we protect the linebacker so that he can make more plays? You know what I'm saying? So to me,
I do. And let's talk about that if you don't mind. Let's talk about that. I mentioned at the top of the show that the head coach was not committed. It sounded like in his press conference, not necessarily committed to bringing back Mike Pettine. And then a couple hours later, it comes out that they had a meeting. Pettine said whatever needed to be said to lock himself back into that job. Would you have kept Mike Pettine knowing that he is the architect of the scheme? Because Matt LaFleur is many things, but the designer of this defense, he is not.
Right. I mean, let's take a look at that. Like back in our day, Mike Holmgren, he didn't give a damn about what Fritz was doing. You see what I'm saying? He didn't give a damn. He too worried about Brett and that offense because he knew that Fritz was well capable of doing his job. And it was like, Fritz was like, don't come in my office with that shit. I got this. You know, that's how it's supposed to be. But do you think LaFleur has that much confidence in this guy to do that? And I don't think he does. I don't think he does. But his hands are tied because he's so worried about the offense that he's hoping this guy can bring it along. And for me, if I was doing it, if he didn't tell me anything about changing up the scheme, I would have let his ass go.
So that's where I'm at, Gilbert. I feel like there had to have been that conversation. And maybe it's just wishful thinking on my part, but I feel like they went into a meeting and Matt must have said something along the lines of, what are we going to do to get better? And he must have liked the answer. I refuse to believe that those two went into a meeting and Pettine was just like, oh, no, we're running the right stuff. We just need to get the right guys or, you know, we'll be a lot better in year three than we were in year two. I have to feel like there were real actual changes that could have been made that got suggested. But as I mentioned, that absolutely could be wishful thinking. One of the guys that I think is definitely, and you and I will probably actually fall on different sides of this, we got to talk about Blake Martinez, because Blake Martinez right now is not under contract with any NFL team, but certainly not the Green Bay Packers. There were reports out from Mike Garofalo indicating that Blake Martinez looks like he'll be gone, that he won't come back to the Green Bay Packers. You look at a website, I believe it's Spotrac that is doing this, but they're talking about his market value being around like $16 million. You know, Bobby Wagner makes $18 million. CJ Mosley signed for $17 million a year. We're not talking total. We're talking about a year. $18 million for Bobby Wagner, $17 million for CJ Mosley. Quan Alexander made similar money. And I just think that there are way better places you can spend that. And it sounds like the Packers think that too. For $16 million, man, I better be getting a top end corner or a top end defensive lineman. The way the NFL is now, you look at the Super Bowl teams and they're just, I know Quan plays for the San Francisco 49ers, but he was hurt all year. You know, they had a third round pick and a fifth round pick starting all year. The Chiefs have nobodies that basically got cut from Dallas at inside linebacker. And I'm not saying that an inside linebacker can't help you win. I'm just not spending. I mean, that's $16 million is damn near quarterback money. I think you disagree. Do you not, Gilbert?
I do. I mean, everybody got to understand that defense wins championships. And if you got the right dynamic in there, if the other team don't score, we win. So everybody's so offensive minded that we got to have three or four of the greatest top receivers with running back and da-da-da-da-da. But it don't matter if your offense is awesome and your defense sucks, because you can score and they can score and we can be in a shootout for all 16 games. You got to get a bona fide defense to shut down the offense. And to me, you know, the key of this defense, the leader is Blake Martinez. I mean, let's go. I think we can still win games with what we got in the offensive huddle. I think we're a player or two away from getting better. But defensively, we got to fix that, man. Or the scheme, the linebacker position, getting Kenny Clark some help inside. I mean, so many areas we got to think about, man. We can't worry about what the money situation is if we want to be the best.
Right, and I mean, the money situation is only a sense of it's a finite resource, right? You sign Blake to that money means you don't get to sign other people. And I'm not saying Blake's not worth the money. That's not necessarily where I'm going with it. I'm just saying you need that to address other needs, not necessarily even offensive needs. It's not necessarily what I mean. Let me pose a question to you, and just kind of your thought process. So in my opinion, one of the top five defensive linemen in the league is going to be a free agent. Chris Jones from the Kansas City Chiefs, big, long, kind of that three technique, five technique, plays all along that defensive line. Kansas City moved to more of a 4-3 this year, so he's playing specifically at the three. Guy has 58 quarterback pressures, ended up with 9 sacks, 14 quarterback hits, just an absolute monster playing inside. He's looking at about $18 million. So for $2 million more dollars, give or take, you could get a top five defensive lineman in the league or Blake. And I just want to pose that as a question to you. What do you think would be more helpful? Bringing in no name is mean. I don't mean that, but bringing in kind of a nondescript linebacker, or letting Ty Summers have a crack at it, or drafting a kid in the third or fourth round, and then bring in Chris Jones, or do the same thing on the defensive line and keep Blake. What do you feel like it would have more impact on next year's defense?
Oof. You know what, man? It depends on the scheme, man.
Keep playing the scheme. No, you're right.
It depends on the scheme. I mean, because if he's going to come back with that same scheme they played last year, the guys you said won't fit in that scheme. They won't fit in that scheme.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because he don't want a big nose tackle in there. He wants these up the field fast guys that normally gets blocked up against the run, and they get up to the linebacker, and there you go. If you got Blake Martinez or Bobby Wagner or even old boy that just retired not too long ago, Willis, they ain't going to do nothing because these guards are up on them so fast, and the running back is just reading the block and go to the races. Like what happened in when we played San Francisco. This dude gets 200-and-some yards because of what? Watch the scheme, and you'll see how he got those 200 yards.
Right. But no, I get it. I mean, it doesn't – problem is, obviously, it doesn't answer the question. You know what? They have to make moves and they have to change the scheme. But anyway, that's kind of where I'm at. How about where are you at with Bulaga? Because I'm a keep Bulaga kind of guy. I mean, there's certainly another, you know, again, there's a number where I'm moving on, and I'd even bring back Veld here, that guy that came in and kind of spelled him. I think if somebody comes in and says, hey, Brian, we've got $48 million over the next 4 years. All right, well, we'll see you later. You know, that kind of deal. But if he signs, you know, more of what like Sitton and Lang did back in the day, which, you know, that was $6-8 million. In today's NFL, probably $8-10 million, something reasonable, 3 years, $30 million, something like that, where he's only 30. You know, people forget he started in the Super Bowl when he was like 23 years old, 22 maybe even. He'd been a good player for a long time. But he has not been the most physically reliable player. You know, missed time this year, missed a couple almost whole seasons, did miss an entire season when he blew out his knee. Where do you kind of fall on the Brian Bulaga?
I like Bulaga, man. He's solid. You know, he's a guy where – you can leave him out there and don't worry about having to help. Most of the time, have to help him chip, get somebody to help chip. He's a consummate pro, as they say. You know what I'm saying? Like, I like the way he plays his game. But in those crucial times where he's out or something happened, now you got to think of, okay, if we keep Bulaga, we got to get us a solid backup that can maybe do both sides, you know, and or just there when we need him. And that Valdir dude is the guy, but does he want to be second fiddle? You know what I'm saying? Does he think he's better than Bulaga? So put me there and go get another guy. So it's those type of things where Mr. Bryant got to do his job and his due diligence, as they say, to, in fact, put this guy with that guy and try to see the combination of the five guys to make it work, if that equation helps you.
No, I understand what you mean. I do. And Valdir, honestly, you know, he's basically retired. You know, they talk about coming up off the couch. I mean, he came up off the couch for, you know, off the New England Patriots retirement list and right into Green Bay. And I'll tell you what, man, he played – there are playoff teams that Jared Valdir played better than one of their starting tackles. I absolutely think he could start in the league next year. And this is, we're talking about a guy that is, let me just look it up real quick here. I know this is great, great radio. We're talking about a 32-year-old guy. There are plenty of tackles that are 33, 34, 35 years old in this league that can still play. I think he absolutely could be a starting tackle next year, no problem. And that, like I said, my opinion, I think that's very reasonable. One thing too that I wanted to just briefly discuss with you, but I think we're going to be right on the same wavelength here as well. Gutekunst talked to us. So everybody talks about the trade deadline this year and maybe adding Mohamed Sanu. Well, they didn't do that because the Patriots did. All right. Well, maybe we'll add Emmanuel Sanders. Well, they didn't do that because the 49ers did. Gutekunst admitted that they were involved in all of those talks and adding an explosive offensive player at the deadline, but ultimately didn't find any value in it. My opinion is that if he was going to go a third and a fourth round pick for Manny Sanders, no thanks. Certainly not a second round pick for Mohamed Sanu. I think he did the right thing. And at no point during that San Francisco game did I think to myself, boy, if they just had a better number two wide receiver, we'd really be in business.
Yeah, I mean, offensively, man, I mean, the young guys that we have, the guys that we got on paper, okay, we got Davante Adams, and then everybody else. What's his name? Lazard.
Alan Lazard, the alien lizard.
Right. I think he's a good number two. I do. I mean, because you know the drop-off was going to happen when they let Cobb go, you know. And I think Cobb had an okay season in Dallas. I think he did. But, you know, after those two, who's there? Who do you think can be better than the number two or be a number three? I don't see it. Do you?
No. And I mean, I think, honestly, I think realistically, you're going to feel a lot better about Alan Lazard if he is your number three or number four. Great special teams guy. Mm-hmm. And showed that he can be one of your, you know, because nowadays every offense basically starts three receivers. And he showed that on a good NFL offense, he can be one of your best three or four guys. But that was kind of it. You know, Geronimo, he's not it. He won't be on the team next year. He's not under contract. He'll be gone. Kumaro's a nice story, you know, but the guy's 28. I mean, people act like he's this rookie that's just coming up. He's 28. You know, he's like 3 years older than Devontae, you know. Anyway, that's a topic for another day. But you're absolutely right. I mean, they don't have that guy. And this is a great draft class for wide receiver. And it's a great free agent class for wide receivers. Mm-hmm. And that was the one position that Gutekunst talked about kind of fixing in that press conference. So be very interesting to see what they do as far as kind of weaponizing Aaron Rodgers. All right, last thing I want to talk to you about, because we're running a little heavy today, which is fine, is number 52, Rashawn Gary. That is the highest pick the Packers have had in a decade, that number 12 overall pick. And from a flat-out like box score perspective, you're not really going to like his stats from this season. You got 21 tackles and 2 sacks. Now, the pressure numbers were better. There are a couple of other, you know, things that he did well on film. But like Brian Gutekunst said, you know, he's playing behind two pretty good guys. Plus, they played Fackrell a lot. They played Preston and Za'Darius Smith a ton. Now, maybe they did that because Rashawn Gary wasn't ready. I've talked about kicking him inside to 3-tech. Where are you at on Rashawn Gary? Do you feel like you're a little bit worried about that pick? Do you feel like he's going to work out? I mean, where are you at from what you saw from big number 52?
Well, you know me, man. I already said me and you butt heads about putting him at a 3-tech and moving Kenny over to the nose. To me, I don't see that doesn't move me. And you know, him being Michigan, right? He came from Michigan, right?
Michigan, yeah. Played with his hand in the ground, kind of in a 4-3 under, where he was pretty much on the tight end side taking up blocks.
Mm-hmm. The Smith brothers played. I don't see nobody taking their position. I mean, the Smith brothers are locked because of the way they played the pass and the run, to me. So where can you put 52? That's the thing that you got to understand.
Told you the 3-tech.
No, you don't put him. I'm telling you, it's the point of attack that you got to see. And when you see him, if he comes down into that's where the big boys play, man. You gotta be a hog in there. You know, I mean, you can't look at it because of his pass rushing abilities. You gotta, and for a defensive coach or a defensive minded guy like me, you gotta look at him as, can he play the run first? Because the run is what's gonna get you rooted out of there. You don't know when passing's coming along, so you're gonna throw him in there and see how he does at a point of attack. And I don't see that happening. But of course, you know, you the X's and O's guy, I'm the physical guy. You know, I just don't see a place for him inside. And outside, he's going to be a backup because the Smith brothers got it locked up. I don't know if he can lose more weight and be a line. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I'm bewildered on number 52.
Yeah, and you know, he's 6'4", 6'5", 280. So it's not like he's not the size of a defensive lineman. No, he absolutely
right.
is.
Yeah, you're right.
And you know, what I would say too is I love pass rushers. I feel like, you know, your situation was a little bit different in the sense that I bet Sean and Reggie didn't come off the field a ton.
No.
Correct?
Correct.
And that has kind of evolved as time has gone on, with the way especially that people do pass rush nowadays. Like, you go back and you think of the great pass rush of like the last time somebody really did it well, 2015 Denver Broncos. They had DeMarcus Ware on one side and they had Von Miller on one side. Two Hall of Famers rushing on the same on the same defense. Mm-hmm. And what I think people sometimes forget is that they would bring Shaq Barrett and Shane Ray in maybe every third series, you know, something like that, but they would give Ware and Miller a break. And so let's say there's 70 snaps in the game. Well, you'd give 45 snaps to Ware and Miller, but then you give the other 25 snaps to Shaq Barrett and Shane Ray. And they did a great job in that, you know, in that role. And I think bringing pass rushers in waves and keeping them fresh is really something that annoys the bejesus out of offensive tackles. And I think that's what the Packers were looking to do, because they took an edge rusher right after signing two edge rushers. And they knew that they were going to have multiple pressure people, you know, on the defense, same way the Packers still signed Julius Peppers, even though they had Nick Perry and Clay Matthews. They just were going to find a way to use them. But anyway, well, there's plenty of time to talk about Rashawn Gary, and time is something that we are pretty much out of. So, Gilbert, I want to thank you for your time, especially here on a Saturday morning. I want to remind you guys that there are two main ways that you can support the show. The number one way, and the most important way, is tell a friend, tell five friends, tell 10 friends about the Packer Report podcast with Gilbert Brown. Get them to subscribe. Make sure they're listening to every show. Make sure that, you know, when you subscribe, it's easy. Every episode of this show is automatically downloaded onto the device of your choosing. It's a slick deal, and it's something that we would really, really appreciate. The other way to support the show is to become a VIP member at Packer Report, and we have a phenomenal setup for you guys in that sense. 60% off an annual membership. We're talking less than $45 for the entire year. You'll get all of our VIP, breaking news, all of the VIP analysis, all the VIP film study, and you'll get access to the entire 24/7 network, which includes Badger 24/7, includes Gopher Illustrated, includes, you know, Texas, Alabama, whoever your college team is. We have their site on the network as well. Guys, we really want to thank you one more time, and go Pack, go.